Hello and welcome to the UC Press Podcast, the podcast from the University of California Press. My name is Chris Gondek, and today I'm speaking with Rosemary Drisdell, the author of Parasites, Tales of Humanity's Most Unwelcome Guests. Rosemary Drisdell is a writer and a clinical parasitologist living in Nova Scotia. Rosemary Drisdell, thank you so much for taking time to talk to the University of California Press Podcast today.
It's my pleasure.
Now, before we get into the different ways parasites can affect human ecology, could you give us a working definition of the term parasite?
Well, a parasite is an organism that lives on or in another organism for at least part of its life and gets everything it needs from that host. In the strictest sense of the definition, the host is harmed by the relationship and receives no benefit.
Are there some popular misconceptions about parasites that giving such a definition might help clear up?
Actually, I think that quite the opposite is true. The standard definition is the source of a lot of misconceptions, I believe. It conjures up an organism that is entirely negative, a creature that takes without giving. This is repulsive to many people. They think that such a creature has no value whatsoever and should be annihilated. When we think about parasites in popular culture as well, they're generally entirely malevolent, and the working definition really does nothing to soften that. In fact, when we look at parasites, many of them don't seriously damage their hosts. Some hosts endure some harm, but also receive some benefit. And if you look at parasites from a more distant perspective, if you stand back from the actual infected host, you see that they have value in nature. They help to maintain the balance of nature. Of course, they provide food for other organisms. They drive evolution in some cases. And they also influence in humans' lives. They influence society and history as well.
The first chapter of your book looks at non-native parasites, those that ended up affecting peoples far away from where the parasites had originally developed. Stanley's expeditions in Africa in the 19th century seem to be a textbook case on how this happened.
I'm not sure that you could say that it's exactly a textbook case. I think because parasites are so complex, it's very hard to pigeonhole them in that way. It's also true that some of the parasites in the first chapter spread geographically, but some also spread within their homes because of changes that happened in their local ecology. So the first chapter deals with both of those kinds of things. Henry Stanley's expeditions in the Congo are certainly a beautiful example of how humans can inadvertently provide parasites with that opportunity, the opportunity to spread, and spread sometimes in great abundance. And humans only realize that they've done that in hindsight. They don't see that coming.
So were there particular parasite or parasites that the Stanley expedition might have helped expedite move into the interior of Africa?
Well, indeed, the Stanley expeditions are known for having spread the African trypanosomes through the tsetse belt, which is an area in equatorial Africa where tsetse flies live, and tsetse flies are the vector of African trypanosomes, several different diseases, actually, diseases of both animals and humans. And it wasn't so much that Stanley spread the parasite, but he created the conditions under which that parasite would later spread, because up to that time, there wasn't a lot of communication between the different indigenous groups in that area. And what Stanley did was open up not only trading routes, but also routes for other explorers and slavers to travel into the interior of Africa. And when those people followed Stanley, they brought the trypanosomes and spread that disease all the way across equatorial Africa. When trypanosomes invaded the tsetse belt, they did spread in that sense that they spread to new areas and they invaded, found new populations that they could infect.
Obviously, there was a human cost to that, but if we step farther away back from the view of history, did some way this help Africa?
In a sense, it did, because the trypanosomes, incidentally protected equatorial Africa from the kind of environmental damage that resulted from people moving into many other parts of the continent. This was fortunate for the native species and for the environment there, in a sense. It was fortunate for the native animals that the animal trypanosomes don't really affect the endemic animals of the area, but they do kill domestic animals. So it was impossible for people to move into that area with their domestic animals because both of them became ill and died. The same is not true of the human forms of trypanosomiasis. Those diseases affect both native peoples and explorers and immigrants, people who move in. So the tsetse belt became a deadly place, literally, for people to go.
Your chapters on parasites that are found in food markets and water supplies really makes for some pretty harrowing reading, particularly because many of the examples you give come from the developed world. Are parasites just that clever, or are the efforts of public health officials rather disappointing?
Your question speaks to the belief of people in the developed countries that they are safe, of course, from parasitic infection, that their food supply is safe, which is actually not true. Relative to other parts of the world, it absolutely is true, but we cannot depend on having safe food. Parasites and other organisms do still creep in. To literally answer your question, neither really, to be fair. It's neither that parasites are clever or that public health officials can't do their jobs. Parasites aren't literally clever. It's a mistake to think of them as intelligent or assume they have an agenda other than to survive. They've evolved to exploit certain conditions, and humans are very good at providing those conditions. It would be more accurate, actually, to say that humans are stupid, or at least blissfully unaware of the possible consequences of their actions. A parasite needs something, and we obligingly provide it. And then we say, oops, I didn't see that coming. This is true of humans in general, and public health officials are constantly playing catch-up. One really good recent example of this kind of thing is Cyclospora. Cyclospora keratinensis is a protozoan parasite that causes acute diarrhea in people. We didn't even know about Cyclospora until about 15 years ago. Now, no doubt it's been around for a long time, but it's only in this last recent period that it's come to our attention because it's causing illness, and typically it causes clusters of illness in people. We've seen it in North America for years, almost every spring, about this time of year. So what are we doing differently? Why is Cyclospora suddenly appearing? In North America, what we're doing is we're importing a lot of produce from tropical and semi-tropical regions. And what they're doing differently there is that they're mass-producing for an export market. But somewhere, sometimes in their production methods, they're contaminating the produce with Cyclospora, and we still don't really know how they're doing that. So where did it come from? Where does it hide in between these outbreaks? We don't know. And so it's hard for public health officials to be on top of a situation like that. But if you were to look in contrast at something like Trichinella, well, way back in the 1800s, 1900s, we probably spread Trichinella around a lot by domesticating pigs, by moving pigs from one part of the world to another, and then by keeping pigs closely together, feeding them garbage, and keeping them in places where they also came in contact with rats that also currently commonly carry Trichinella. So when it became understood that this was why Trichinella was common, why it infested pork so much, because of the way that we were rearing the pigs, once that was really understood, then we saw how we could prevent it. And what we've done, stopping or sterilizing feed for pigs, making sure we don't feed them raw meat scraps and keeping them in perhaps better conditions where they don't come in contact with rats so much, was actually very effective in removing Trichinella from most of our food supply. So that now in North America, most cases of Trichinella that we see come from people eating wild meat like bears or in the north walrus. So public health has been very effective in cases like that.
You give quite a few examples of how parasites might have affected the historical development of certain regions in certain eras. I was particularly interested about whether a parasite affected the outcome of the American Civil War.
Well, we can say that hookworm had a major impact on events in the American Civil War. I don't think we can say that the outcome would have been different had hookworm not been there, because there's really no way to know that. We can say that a large proportion of Southerners fighting for the Confederate Army had hookworm disease. It was rampant in the southern United States, and nobody knew that because they didn't know about the worm. It wasn't discovered for decades afterwards. Chronic hookworm disease leaves you anemic, weak, listless, It would have made it very challenging for soldiers to cope with the physical demands of war. So the Confederate Army was hampered by the existence of that worm and the fact that so many of the soldiers were infected. Now, because hookworm is confined to regions with very specific climatic conditions, roughly between 30 degrees latitude north and south, where the soil is warm and moist, it's very specific and it's very delicate and easy to kill. Because of that, the northern parts of the United States did not have rampant hookworm disease, and so soldiers in those armies weren't dealing with chronic hookworm disease. They didn't have the same health handicap when it came to war. Of course, they did. Many of them did become infected when they fought in the South. So in that sense, hookworm fought for the Union. It's a beautiful irony, really, because it was enslaved Africans that brought the parasite to North America in the first place. Their own parasites helped to liberate them.
Now, you also, apart from giving historical examples, look at specific parasites. And one of the ones that I have to say really affected me was T. gondii. Could you explain what T. gondii is?
Toxoplasma gondii. It's a protozoan, a single-celled parasite. It lives in the tissues of vertebrates and in the tissues and intestines of cats. Humans are an accidental host of Toxoplasma gondii. The natural life cycle involves cats and rodents, but the parasite is also able to infect virtually any warm-blooded vertebrate animal. So it does spread much more widely in nature. Many people, even though we're an accidental host, many people around the world are infected, considerably more than 50% in some parts of the world. And we get it from exposure to cat feces, from accidentally ingesting the oocyst of the protozoan parasite, which is an infective stage, or by eating undercooked meat. As I said, a lot of vertebrates, warm-blooded vertebrates, are infected. And so if we eat the meat of those vertebrates without properly cooking it, then we can ingest a stage of the parasite that will infect our tissues as well.
What is it capable of doing in humans?
It's capable of doing a number of things in humans. It can be very devastating as an initial infection in some people. Most people don't even realize they're infected, but some, specifically unborn babies and people whose immune systems are not working properly, become seriously ill. Unborn babies may die, causing septic abortion or stillbirth, or they may be born with abnormalities including brain damage, or they could even appear normal at birth but suffer blindness and other health problems later in life. People with AIDS also are susceptible and can die from the infection. And one thing that's interesting there is often people with AIDS have been exposed to the organism at a much earlier time when their immune systems were working properly and the parasite has become latent in their tissues. And it's not until the immune system stops holding that parasite at bay that the infection reasserts itself. The parasite starts to multiply unchecked. And because it's often located in the brain, it causes some serious neurological problems. And people with AIDS simply aren't capable of fighting it off. So it becomes a rapidly fatal infection. Now, in a more subtle way, and this is the most fascinating part for me, Toxoplasma gondii affects behavior. There's been a lot of research that shows exactly how it affects behavior in rodents, in particularly rats and mice, where it makes them less afraid of cats and less likely to avoid contact with a cat. And so, therefore, it makes it more likely for them to be eaten by a cat. As I said, normally the life cycle goes through cats and rodents. So that's exactly where the parasite wants to go. In humans, it appears to cause things like slower reaction times, shortened attention span, and perhaps more risky behavior. And there's mounting evidence as well that it's involved in some forms of mental illness, such as schizophrenia and bipolar illnesses. So this is all over the long term. As in what I mentioned with AIDS patients, where their infection becomes again active when their immune system breaks down. In people whose immune system remains normal, the parasite is held at bay, but it seems to have a long-term effect on behavior and possibly on personality. And this is something that we really haven't nailed down yet. We don't quite understand how it's working, and one of the reasons for that is it's much more difficult to do research on people, of course. But there is mounting evidence that it is causing causing changes in human personality. And of course, there's a question of whether in populations where there's a high incidence of infection with toxoplasma, whether it could be causing entire social changes in culture, which is very interesting but very difficult to prove.
Rosemary Drisdell, the author of Parasites, Tales of Humanity's Most Unwelcome Guests, thanks so much for being on the University of California Press podcast today.
Thank you.
For more information about this and other titles, please visit our website at www.ucpress.edu. You can also become a fan of the UC Press on Facebook, or you can follow us on Twitter, where we are at UC Press. Thanks for listening to this episode of the UC Press podcast. Copyright 2010, the University of California Press, all rights reserved.